All right, let's get right into another deep dive. This time we're going inside Indiana State Prison, and specifically, we're going to be focusing on death row.
Oh, wow.
We got this really fascinating YouTube documentary here. It's called Inside Indiana's Death Row, The Last Moments of Life.
Okay.
And it's from a channel called True Lives. And it's given us a window into this world that I think most people just never see.
Yeah.
You know, you start thinking like, what's it actually like to live each day?
Yeah.
Knowing that you know, you're potentially facing execution.
Right.
And what happens when things get even crazier? Like,
yeah.
Like when a drug epidemic hits the prison and the whole state goes on lockdown.
Wow.
So get ready for this one because it's pretty intense.
Yeah, this is going to be heavy. I can already tell.
Yeah.
So one of the things that really jumps out at me is just the bizarre situation on Indiana's death row right now.
Right.
You've got this, you know, they haven't had any executions in 8 years. Yeah.
And the main reason for that is a lot of pharmaceutical companies are just refusing to supply the drugs they need for lethal injections.
Right.
But here's the weird part.
Yeah.
They went ahead and built a brand new death chamber.
Wow.
I mean, that's a pretty strong statement about where the state stands on the death penalty.
It really is, yeah.
You know, it's like they're saying, well, we're not getting rid of it, but we're not exactly in a hurry to use it either.
Yeah.
So what do you think that does to the men who are actually living on death row?
I don't know. I can't imagine. I mean, to talk about a pressure cooker.
Yeah.
I mean, you're living in this total limbo.
Mm.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, at any time, things could change.
Right.
And executions could start up again.
Yeah.
So it's not just the fear of death itself.
It's the waiting.
Yeah.
That's the not knowing.
Yeah.
You know, you can't plan for the future. Really?
You're just stuck. And they actually introduce us to this inmate, Benjamin Ritchie.
Who is literally first in line for execution if things change.
Wow.
And he's very open about his crime. You know, he shot and killed a police officer.
Mm.
And he even talks about how he broke prison rules.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for a woman he was interested in.
Wow.
Like, he knew there could be consequences, but he still went for it. Mm. You know, they even mentioned in the documentary, he described her as a Victoria's Secret model type bad.
He did.
Like, even in a place like that,
yeah,
there's still that human connection,
right,
that need for it.
Totally.
And Ritchie talks about the relief he feels knowing that executions are on hold right now.
Yeah.
You know, he actually says he wishes he could just have a more normal prison life,
mm,
which is interesting to hear from a guy in his position.
Absolutely, yeah.
But then you also realize there's this whole other layer of complexity on death row.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a pecking order.
Okay.
Even there, you know, like a social hierarchy.
And Ritchie really doesn't like this other inmate, Frederick Bear.
Oh, yeah, Frederick Bear.
Yeah.
Now, the documentary called him the, I think they said, the most hated man on death row.
Yeah, they did not mince words.
Not at all. So what makes him stand out like that?
Yeah.
I mean, even among, you know, people who have committed really serious crimes.
Well, his crimes are just horrific.
Yeah.
I mean, he murdered a mother and her 4-year-old daughter.
Oh, wow.
And he even admits that he was planning on raping the mother before he killed them both.
Oh, my God.
You know, that level of brutality, especially with such vulnerable victims.
Right.
It's just, it creates this visceral reaction.
Yeah, of course.
But it's not just about the nature of the crimes themselves.
Okay.
It's more than that. There's,
yeah,
more to it.
Look.
You know, they, yeah, show him in the documentary just being constantly harassed,
yeah,
abused by other inmates.
Right.
They even talk about people putting urine in his food.
Yeah.
Even, you know, harmful substances.
Oh.
It's like vigilante justice.
Yeah.
You know, it goes beyond just disapproving of his actions.
Right.
It's something else entirely.
Yeah. I mean, it's like this unspoken code.
Exactly.
In the prison.
Yeah.
You know, like, even those who were disgusted by his crimes,
mm-hmm,
they don't necessarily want to see the state execute him.
Right.
They'd rather handle it themselves.
Yeah, within those walls.
Right.
Where they control the rules.
Exactly. It's like a whole separate society inside there.
It really is.
With its own laws and moral codes.
Its own system of justice.
Yeah, and it's pretty scary.
Not a place you want to be on the wrong side of.
No, absolutely not.
Now, the documentary also shifts gears a bit.
Okay.
And takes us into this chaotic 5-week lockdown,
yeah,
that happened because of a K2 or spice epidemic that was sweeping through the prison.
Yeah.
It's a whole other side of prison life compared to just living under the threat of execution.
Yeah, that's a totally different kind of pressure.
Yeah, right. The conditions during that lockdown were brutal.
Oh, I bet.
They had to stay in their cells 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
Very limited shower access.
Jeez.
Handcuffed all the time.
Wow.
It's like sensory deprivation on top of an already restricted environment.
Right. Yeah.
And we hear from Christopher Pavey, who's a long-term inmate. He's served 30 years.
Wow.
And he says he'd never seen anything like it. You know, just imagine the toll that takes on everybody.
Yeah, mentally and physically.
Right.
Just that feeling of being trapped.
Yeah, just that constant tension.
And the documentary actually mentions that Pavey witnessed someone die from spice during the lockdown.
That's right.
I mean, it just shows you the desperation.
Yeah.
And the lack of resources that fuel this kind of problem.
Absolutely.
So then the documentary takes us back to death row.
Okay.
And we're introduced to William Clyde Gibson, who was the only serial killer.
The only one.
On Indiana's death row.
Yeah.
And his crimes are just horrifying.
They really are.
He was convicted of murdering three women.
Mm-hmm.
But he confesses that there could be many more victims.
Yeah.
And what's really chilling is how calmly he talks about it all.
It's so disturbing.
It's like he's detached.
Completely.
From the horror of what he did.
It's like he's talking about the weather.
Yeah.
He even admitted that he enjoyed cutting up his victims.
Oh, my God.
And what's even more unsettling is this contrast. You know, he claims to have had a normal childhood.
Yeah.
But he talks about killing like it's nothing.
Right.
He even said that he could go have dinner afterward.
Wow.
Like, without a second thought.
Yeah, it's hard to understand, like, how does someone become like that?
Is it nature?
Yeah.
Nurture?
Right.
I mean, it's a terrifying question.
It really is. And then he adds another layer of just horror.
Right.
By saying that he's killed a lot more people
mm-hmm.
than the police even know about.
And they have no idea where to even begin to look.
It's a chilling thought.
It really is.
I mean, think of all those potential victims mm-hmm. and their families.
Not knowing yeah.
if their loved one was one of his victims.
Yeah, it's a really heavy thing to think about.
Yeah, this documentary is, it's not pulling any punches.
Not at all.
I mean, we've gone from the constant threat of execution to the craziness of this drug-fueled lockdown
right.
to the chilling confessions of a serial killer.
Yeah.
And it's all within the walls of this one prison.
Yeah, and we're just getting started.
And this is just the beginning.
Yeah.
There's so much more to unpack here.
There is. We got a lot more to talk about.
Absolutely.
So let's take a quick break and we'll come back and we'll dive even deeper.
Sounds good. It's kind of crazy to think about Richie. You know, that whole thing in the visiting room.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he knew he'd get in trouble.
Yeah.
But that connection was so important to him.
Mm-hmm.
He risked it all.
Yeah. It really shows you. And even his description of her.
Yeah.
I mean, Victoria's Secret model type bad.
Oh, he was very specific.
It's like, even in a place like death row.
Yeah.
That human need for connection.
It doesn't go away.
It's still there.
Right. It makes you wonder.
It really does.
About the mental and emotional toll.
Yeah, the deprivation.
Yeah.
Of not having those kinds of relationships.
Right.
Now, going back to Frederick Bear,
yeah.
we talked about how much the other inmates hate him.
Right.
And it seems like it goes deeper.
Deeper than just, you know, what he did.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They see him as a traitor.
Right, a snitch.
Yeah.
That seems to be the worst thing you can do in prison.
Like the ultimate betrayal.
Yeah.
You know, breaking that inmate code.
Right. It's fascinating, though, isn't it?
It really is.
Like, you've got this system designed to punish.
Yeah.
But then within that system,
they've got their own rules.
Yeah, their own kind of justice.
And it can be even more brutal.
Yeah, much more unforgiving.
It's a stark reminder that these social dynamics,
yeah.
they play out everywhere.
Yeah, even in the most extreme environments.
Right, like prison.
Yeah.
Now, there were some parts of the documentary that showed life outside of the lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when inmates had a little more freedom. Like when they finally let those death row inmates out for recreation.
Oh, yeah.
You could see it in their faces.
Relief to be out of those cells.
Just to move around, you know, even if it was limited.
Yeah, it's still a big deal.
Remember how they mentioned that Bear wasn't allowed out with the others?
Oh, right.
They were too worried he'd get attacked.
Yeah, but it's like even during those brief moments of freedom.
The tension's still there.
It's palpable.
Yeah.
That weight of what they've done.
And the consequences they face.
Right, even within the prison walls.
Yeah, never really goes away.
But even with all of that, with all the darkness, there were these glimpses of humanity. Like with Ronald Sanford.
Oh, man, his story.
You got 170 years for a double homicide.
Yeah, and he was only 13 when he did it.
13 years old.
It really makes you think about the justice system.
I know, like, should a kid?
Be tried as an adult.
Yeah, be sentenced like that.
And his mother.
Oh, she's amazing.
So supportive.
Yeah, even with all their past troubles.
Unwavering.
It's really something.
Especially with that recent Supreme Court ruling.
Right, the one that's changing how we sentence juveniles.
It's a huge shift.
Yeah.
Sanford's case, though, I mean, it raises so many questions.
It really does.
I mean, he talks about his childhood being so violent.
Right, almost like a training ground for violence.
Exactly.
It makes you wonder how much his environment played a role.
Like, where does personal responsibility start?
Yeah, when you've been exposed to that level of trauma.
Right. And can someone like that truly be rehabilitated?
It's tough. Those are really difficult questions.
They are.
No easy answers.
We're still figuring it out,
Yeah.
but it's a conversation we need to have.
Absolutely.
Especially as we learn more about how trauma affects the brain.
Okay, so let's talk about Paul McManus.
Oh, yeah, his case is interesting.
He was on death row.
For killing his wife and kids.
Yeah, but then he got his sentence reduced.
To life without parole.
Yeah, after an appeal.
Get this, he says he actually prefers death row
Really?
to general population.
I don't understand.
It's strange, right?
That's wild.
He says knowing his fate,
Yeah.
having that certainty, it was almost comforting.
Wow.
But now I
In
can't.
general population,
It is lost.
it's almost like he misses that structure.
Yeah, the finality of it.
And don't forget about those tattoos.
Oh, the ones of his victims.
Yeah, he has their names and dates of birth.
It's like a constant reminder,
Yeah, of what he did.
a physical manifestation of his guilt.
Right, like he can never escape it.
It makes you wonder if someone like that
Yeah.
can ever find peace.
Or redemption.
It's a deep question.
It really is.
And then there's Rick Perry.
Oh, the older gentleman?
Yeah, 72 years old.
Serving multiple life sentences.
For armed burglary and kidnapping.
It's crazy to think.
That under today's laws,
Yeah.
he probably wouldn't have gotten such a harsh sentence.
It shows how much things have changed.
Our views on crime and punishment.
Right.
And remember that photo board he made?
Yeah, the one he was going to take with him when he got out.
It's so sad.
Yeah, now it's just a reminder.
Of what could have been.
Right.
And his story is just one example
Yeah.
of this growing issue of aging inmates.
Right. People spending their last years in prison.
With all the healthcare challenges that come with
And
that.
the sense of hopelessness.
It's something we don't talk about enough,
Yeah, it's a whole other side of the system.
with its own ethical and logistical dilemmas.
Absolutely.
But, you know, amidst all these individual stories, we have to remember the victims.
Right.
The documentary doesn't shy away from their suffering, the
Yeah.
pain that their families have endured.
It's a sobering reminder that every crime
Every act of violence
has these ripple effects.
that extend far beyond the immediate people involved. You
Exactly.
know, this deep dive,
Yeah.
it's been heavy.
It has.
We've seen the dark side of humanity.
The capacity for cruelty.
Yeah.
It's been tough.
But it's also challenged us
Yeah.
to look beyond the
To
headlines
see these men as
at
individual,
their own complex stories.
right, their own circumstances.
I'm not easy.
It's not, but it's important.
Absolutely.
So where do we go from here?
Well, I think it's about recognizing that every human being has worth.
Even those who've done terrible things.
Exactly.
It's about finding a way to balance,
Justice and compassion
yeah, and understanding the systemic factors.
that contribute to these situations.
This deep dive has been challenging for sure, but it's also been really eye-opening.
Definitely.
We've seen the darkest corners of humanity, but we've also seen glimpses of hope, the
Resilience,
potential for change.
even in the face of such adversity.
And I think that's what we need to focus on.
The possibility of redemption.
Yeah. And the importance of continuing this conversation
Absolutely.
about justice, about punishment, about what it means to be human.
Because ultimately it's all connected.
Right. We're all part of this.
And understanding these complexities,
Yeah.
it's essential if we want to create a more just.
More humane world.
Exactly.
Thanks for joining us on this journey,
That's been a heavy one,
but an important one.
for sure.
And we encourage you to keep thinking about these issues.
Do your own research.
Yeah, talk to people.
Engage in dialogue.
Because this is an ongoing conversation.
It is.
And we all have a role to play.
Absolutely.
So until next time.
Keep diving deep.
You know, I keep thinking about William Clyde Gibson. That serial killer, I can't get those interviews out of my head.
They were pretty disturbing.
He just seemed so...
cold.
Yeah.
Yeah, detached.
Yeah, like he had no remorse at all.
I mean, the way he talked about killing, it was just, it was chilling.
It was like he was talking about something totally normal.
Right, like making a sandwich or something.
Yeah, and even a little bit of enjoyment in his voice.
Yeah, like he took pleasure in it.
It's hard to even comprehend that.
It really is.
Like, how can a human being...
Like that.
Be like that, yeah.
And to think he claims he had this normal childhood.
I know.
So unsettling.
It really is. It makes you wonder, like, what creates a monster like that?
Right. Was there something always there?
Yeah.
Or is it something that happens along the way?
The environment, maybe.
Yeah, the influences.
I mean, he actually said he could kill someone.
And then just go have dinner.
Like it was nothing.
Like it was just another day.
Chilling. It's just chilling.
It's a total disconnect from his actions and the consequences.
No empathy.
None whatsoever.
And then he says he's killed more people.
That nobody knows about.
Yeah.
That the police don't even know about.
It's terrifying to think about all those families out there.
Not knowing,
yeah.
Wondering.
It's heartbreaking.
It really is.
This whole deep dive, it's been...
A lot. It's been tough.
We've seen some pretty dark stuff.
The worst of humanity.
Yeah, the cruelty, the violence.
It's hard to process sometimes.
But it's also shown us, like... The resilience.
Oh, yeah.
Of the human spirit.
It's a strength.
Yeah. And the power of connection.
Even in the darkest places.
We saw moments of regret.
Yeah.
Hope for redemption.
The love of family.
Yeah. Never giving up on each other.
It's powerful.
It is. It really is. And I think
it's
left me with a deeper understanding of just how complex people are.
Right.
Like there's good and bad in everyone.
It's all mixed up in there.
Yeah. And it's never simple.
No.
So what are your final thoughts on all of this?
Well, I keep coming back to the weight of our choices.
Okay.
You know, like every decision we make, it sets things in motion.
Right.
That can have huge consequences.
That's a really powerful thought.
It is.
It makes you think about what true accountability means.
Yeah. Is it just punishment?
Or is it something more?
Like rehabilitation.
Yeah, restorative justice.
I think it starts with recognizing that everyone has value.
Even people who've done terrible things.
Exactly.
It's about trying to understand.
To empathize.
Yeah, to have those difficult conversations.
Well, how we can do better.
As individuals, as a society.
As a whole.
Yeah, it's been a journey.
It has.
This deep dive.
One.
Yeah, but so important.
Absolutely.
And we hope that you keep thinking about these things.
Keep learning.
Keep talking.
Keep exploring.
Because understanding all of this...
It's a process.
Yeah, it's not a one-time thing.
It's ongoing.
And we all need to be part of it.
We do.
So thank you for joining us on this deep dive into Indiana's death row.
It's been real.
It has. And until next time.
Keep diving deep.